You are Locked On Rockets, your daily Houston Rockets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to a special breaking news episode of Locked On Rockets, your home for daily podcast commentary, for better or for worse, on all things Houston Rockets basketball. As always, I'm your host, Ben DuBose, Rockets correspondent with Sports Talk 790, the team's official radio flagship in Houston. As we chat this Tuesday night, the reason I say for better or for worse, tonight's breaking news, at least at the moment, is not of the positive variety. That breaking news, as you may have already heard by now, first broken by Jonathan Fagan of the Houston Chronicle, the Rockets were not able to come to a contract agreement with Daniel House Jr., which means that he will report, barring a late reversal, to the Rio Grande Valley Vipers at the G League level tomorrow and not be a part of the Rockets roster for at least the immediate future. We'll see what happens with the negotiations. Certainly either party can go back on this at any time. Both think they have leverage. We'll see what happens. But ultimately, the backstory on this, when the Rockets converted Gary Clark's contract in early December to keep him for 3 years, they had to clear a roster spot. They did that by converting Daniel House to a two-way deal, or actually first waived him, then signed him to the two-way deal. That two-way deal has a limit on NBA service time, which, because House has become a starter for the Rockets in this past month, that service time prorated, usually 45 days, but less when you sign it during the season, that can lapse very quickly. It's been a little bit over a month now. The Rockets clearly have not had a resolution for a few days now. That's why they held him out in practice the other day, because they were trying to buy time. And now, because House's NBA days, that portion of the two-way contract are up, either the Rockets had to unilaterally convert him to a one-year deal, which they didn't want to because they would have been limited in their ability to retain him this summer, or they would have had to come to an agreement on a longer-term contract, which the two sides were unable to do. Thus, other than cut him free, which the Rockets don't want to do because they do believe in him, they love what they've seen from him as a 3-and-D player, a good shooter, a good defender, young, athletic over the past month. The only way to move forward with both sides not finding a common ground is to keep him on his existing contract, and his existing contract says he's out of days at the NBA level, and the only choice the Rockets have to do to retain his rights is to send him down. So it's not really a demotion so much as it is a stalemate, and the legalese of the collective bargaining agreement, the contract that he's under, dictates that if the Rockets want to keep his rights without the two sides agreeing to a deal, or the Rockets unilaterally converting him to a one-year deal, which has limitations for their ability to retain him beyond this season, this was the only move that the Rockets could make. And yes, it sucks for them as a basketball team because he's been their starting small forward and a key piece, and they've been winning games. They've won 14 of their last 18, and now they're without Clint Capela, they're without Chris Paul. Eric Gordon, maybe he comes back tomorrow. He's officially listed as questionable, but this is definitely a loss. There's no other way that you can spin it. According to Jonathan Fagan, the Rockets are looking at potentially using a 10-day slot to sign someone to fill those minutes, but ultimately between them not having any experience with the team, the fact that there aren't that many qualified guys out there for the taking as it is, it's hard to imagine that you're going to bring in someone on a 10-day contract that's going to have anywhere near the levels of success that Daniel House has over the past month as your starting small forward and a 3-and-D option. So it's definitely a hit for the Rockets as a basketball team. We'll talk in our final segment, or it's going to be our usual three-point show. On the back end, we'll talk about where the Rockets go from here from a basketball perspective. But the first two segments, because I think this is what's most commonly misunderstood, is what the motivations for the Rockets are, what the motivations for Daniel House Jr. are, and why it's very possible that neither side is doing anything especially wrong. Let's start from the Rockets' angle of this. Why they are willing to let it get to this point, at least for now. Now, I do want to point out again that this is not permanent. At any point, including tomorrow, the Rockets can go back on this decision. If they think it's costing them too much from a basketball perspective or any other angle, they can unilaterally, even without Daniel House Jr.'s consent, convert him to a one-year minimum contract and bring him back up. They have his rights. So no, this is not it. for Danny Woolhouse Jr. in Houston. This is the Rockets trying to figure out how they can retain him beyond this season. Because here is where it gets difficult for the Rockets. If you have him on a one-year deal, even though he's young, which means they would have his rights as a restricted free agent, they would not have bird rights. So they would only be able to offer him 120% of his existing salary, which is below $2 million. So basically, they'd be able to offer him about $2 million on the open market this summer. That's the most they could match or offer without dipping into their mid-level exception. He's probably going to get offered more than that, considering his age, if he continues to play as well as he has. So if the Rockets want to offer or match any outside offers beyond the minimum or 120% of that, the only other tool at their disposal is the mid-level exception, which is about $5 million. But you already have Austin Rivers on a one-year deal, and you clearly like what you have seen from Austin Rivers. Well, if you want to retain Rivers long-term, you have got to use that mid-level exception. And even if you can't retain Rivers, even if he prices himself out, well, then you could use the mid-level exception, especially a quality team like Houston that's desired, on so many other options as well. So having to ticket your mid-level exception to match Danny Woolhouse is not a good scenario. Even though he is restricted, because he's a restricted free agent on a non-Bird contract, the Rockets would not have his Bird rights, effectively, it doesn't mean what you're thinking of when you hear restricted. On a one-year deal, they wouldn't be able to retain him unless they use that mid-level exception, which means no Austin Rivers. It means you can't use it on anyone else as well. That is the crux of the issue from the Rockets' perspective. I've seen some suggestions that is Tillman Fertitta too cheap? No, not at all. The cheap thing to do would actually be just convert him for a one-year minimum contract and then let him go elsewhere for more money this summer. They don't want to do that. It's because they want to keep him that they are going through this step. If you're where the Rockets are, capped out, luxury tax territory, cheap players on one-year deals that are young, that's exactly what you want if you were strictly trying to save money and have ample financial flexibility. That's what they could unilaterally do with Danny Woolhouse Jr. at any moment if they just wanted the most financially advantageous deal for them. They are not doing that because they want to keep him beyond this season. So no, even though it looks like a demotion, he has to go down to the G League level, that's simply a reflective of the league's collective bargaining agreement and the nature of these two-way contracts, which a lot of agents and players are growing to despise because they leave a lot of leverage in the hands of the teams, which the Rockets are trying to exert at this point, and not enough in the hands of the player. From the Rockets' perspective, if you're upset with this, and I understand that losing a starter over a contract dispute in the middle of a season, especially when you're 14-4 in your last 18, it sucks. If there's anyone that you should blame, it would be Daryl Morey before Tillman Fertitta. This is not so much a money thing. This is about Daryl Morey trying to thread the needle of the collective bargaining agreement and find a way to keep both guys currently on one-year deals, Austin Rivers and Danny Woolhouse. The Rockets really like them both. He would love to keep both long-term, each in their mid-20s. They've been a big part of this revival, this turnaround. Well, if you give House the one-year deal and he enters restricted free agency this summer with the Rockets without his Bird rights, it's a Luke Bamute situation again. You're not going to have the money unless you dip into that mid-level exception, and that mid-level exception, in my opinion, is currently earmarked for Austin Rivers, or at least the attempt to bring him back. So what the Rockets are betting, in essence, is that eventually Danny Woolhouse Jr. and his agent will fold. And there's a case for which they could, because I know it's been a great run for him, but think back. Barely over a month ago, early December, when the Rockets converted Gary Clark from his two-way contract and had to clear a roster spot by letting Danny Woolhouse off of his one-year deal go and then signing him to the two-way, that entire plan could have been foiled if any NBA team had been willing to claim Danny Woolhouse on waivers. And since he was making the minimum, anyone could have. They didn't. He's had a nice run. Has his run over the past 4 or 5 months been so transformative to his value that a guy who went unclaimed a month ago is now going to get better than, according to Mark Berman of Fox 26, a 3-year guaranteed deal which the Rockets were offering, albeit at the league minimum? conceivably they could have offered more than minimum, but the problem with offering more than the minimum over 3 years, beyond the small sample size, is that, well, you offer more than the minimum, that it's not going to be that much more, period, because the Rockets have already given up chunks of their mid-level exception for Isaiah Hartenstein and Gary Clark, and they have what limited portion above the minimum they have left of that mid-level exception earmarked for buyout territory later this season. So the Rockets are trying to use every bit of leverage they have to keep their ability to retain Austin Rivers this summer, to keep their ability to get buyout candidates by having a financial leg up in February. The Rockets are playing hardball. That's what the two-way contract allows them to do. And if you're upset with that, you should be more upset with the collective bargaining agreement than you are either party in this negotiation, in my opinion. As far as what the Rockets think, they believe that eventually a guy who a month ago no one wanted at the league minimum when he was subjected to waivers, anyone could have claimed him. This is even after he played 10 days and looked pretty good, and yet he still passed through. Has his value been so transformative that he would pass up $4 or $5 million in guaranteed money to hit the open market in July and get the kind of deal that he wants based on basically 1 month of play from early December until mid-January? That is quite a gamble. Now, he has been good. There's been a lot of spotlight games in there. He is young. Maybe it works out. But I could see why the Rockets, especially if they think they have reinforcements like Eric Gordon and Chris Paul on the way, they might want to test that resolve before giving in and saying that, hey, we're going to sign him to a one-year deal because it's what's best for this season, even if we probably lose him this summer. They can do that tomorrow if they want. But the Rockets have so much leverage with this two-way contract, they are trying to exert every last drop so that they can have the best team they can for this year and beyond. And ultimately, I don't blame them for at least trying it for a few days. Now, if it drags on forever, yeah, at some point, you can wonder if the Rockets are cutting off their nose to spite their face in regards to the pride of these negotiations between Daryl Morey and the agent. To some extent, egos can get involved. Someone has to win. Someone has to lose. But for right now, I understand why the Rockets, with this two-way contract, which limits his value because how much can he really show at the G League level, it's a pretty powerful tool. The Rockets are trying to use what leverage they have to bolster their basketball team now and beyond this season. And if you're upset with the deal, the two-way contract concept allegedly being unfair, then you should really be upset with the NBA and the collective bargaining agreement negotiations more so than the Rockets. The Rockets are acting in their own self-interest. Danny Rojas Jr. thinks he's acting in his self-interest as well. We'll explore his side momentarily. Now, we spent the first segment examining the Rockets' motivation in this contract standoff with Daniel House Jr., largely that they want to keep him beyond this year. Sending him down to the G League level, essentially letting the NBA portion of his two-way contract expire, it's not because they don't value him. No, it's because they do. If they didn't really care that much about him, if they just weren't going to spend on him, they'd say, okay, we'll take you for the league minimum this year. It's a really cheap league minimum because of how young he is, his limited service time. And then he leaves this summer. Whatever, if it's about being cheap, why would you be afraid of him leaving this summer? No, the reason they are playing hardball the way they are is because they want to keep him multiple years. And according to Mark Berman of Fox 26 here in Houston, the Rockets offered him a fully guaranteed deal near the league minimum for 3 years, and evidently House and his agent have rejected that. In fact, as I'm recording this podcast about 9 o'clock Tuesday night, tweet just came out, courtesy of Mark Berman, in which his agent, House's agent, that is, Raymond Brothers, spells out exactly what I was about to argue that he wanted. We asked the Rockets to convert Daniel's two-way contract for the remainder of this year. At this point, the Rockets have refused. So from House, the motivation, he wants to be in Houston, but he wants to get paid. And rather than take a three-year deal at the minimum or slightly above that, but not too much above, because the Rockets have already spent most of their mid-level exception, not most, but a decent portion of it, and it's a taxpayer MLE at that, to where even if the Rockets were willing to use what limited amount of the MLE they have left to their fullest extent to sign Daniel House Jr., you're still looking at a starting salary somewhere in the $3 million range, maybe a little bit above that. So certainly, it's not as rosy a scenario as if he continues to play this well and then hits the market as a young player this summer. And even though he'd be a restricted free agent, because the Rockets don't have his bird rights, teams would be willing to offer him decent salaries around the league because they know the Rockets probably would not be able to match unless they use the mid-level exception to do that. And if that's the case, then they'd be saying bye to Austin Rivers and anyone else that wanted to use that mid-level exception on. And then if any team wanted to bid above the mid-level exception, the taxpayer MLE, that is, for Daniel House Jr., there's nothing the Rockets could do because they don't have his bird rights. Again, this is a Luke Baumute situation all over again. At this point, it's a bit of a staring contest between House and the Rockets as to who blinks first. The House side of things, because he's been an instrumental player over the past month or so, he thinks the Rockets, because there's so much of a priority on winning this season, and he's right in this assessment, that if they go on any sort of downturn, they won't take the losses, all while they have a perfectly good NBA player just wasting away at the G League level. The flip side to this is that the Rockets say, look, if Daniel House Jr. wants to get paid relatively soon, he's not going to waste his earning power at the G League level, considering he wants that next NBA contract. So both sides are staring at each other, seeing who is going to blink first. And with House, I understand his frustration. I don't know that so much it's going down to the G League level that is at the forefront of his mind right now. I think it's more about what he's being offered and the fact that it's not good enough. The fact that the Rockets are offering this 3-year fully guaranteed deal near the league minimum, that's $4 or $5 million over the next basically 2.5 seasons, because it would include this season, half of which is already gone, so we may as well call it a 2.5-year deal. He wants to hit free agency as soon as he can because he thinks that his play has warranted a larger contract, and he may not be wrong in that assessment. The problem with that perspective is that he signed a two-way contract in the first place, which gives the Rockets his rights, even if they send him down to the G League level. And if he is at the G League level, there's virtually nothing he can do to attract the attention of NBA teams, because the competition that he's going up against, even if he's putting up 40 points a night, is just not good enough to really turn heads. So he gave up a lot of his leverage when he signed that contract, stating that he was willing, if the Rockets deemed fit, to go down to the G League level. He put his trust in their hands. And if you want to argue that the two-way contract is too team-friendly, it's too prohibitive, then you could certainly argue that. But the Rockets are not the only team to use it, and they're far from the last. That's an issue with the league's collective bargaining agreement. So from House's perspective, what he is trying to do is, despite signing this two-way deal, which kills his leverage because he's already used up all the maximum time he has at the NBA level, he's guessing, and also his agent, I should say, who I think is clearly driving the bus, that they think the Rockets will blink first, and maybe they will, because the Rockets have so much invested in this season. There are a lot of injuries at the moment. Chris Paul, Clint Capella, Eric Gordon, maybe Gordon comes back tomorrow. But ultimately, from House's perspective, he wants to hit free agency sooner. I don't think it's that he wants to leave Houston. I just think it's a financially motivated decision. And a lot of folks, I would say 90% of the world, and especially the NBA, act in this manner. He thinks that if he continues to play this well for the Rockets, he is going to get a better offer this summer in terms of guaranteed money than what's on the table right now. And he might be right. But to get that role with the Rockets, he has to be willing to play ball on their terms because he signed that two-way contract. That's the rub. He did not have to sign that two-way contract in December. He could have gone elsewhere. It was a choice that he made. And at this point, he is dealing with the ramifications of that. I know it probably sounds like, at this point, that I'm favoring the Rockets' side. The truth is, I'm in the middle. I favor the Rockets' side when it comes to the dollars and cents, because they're acting in the interest of their long-term finances, what gives them the ability to build the best team over the next few seasons, and as someone that wants this franchise to do well, I hope they win out. The problem is that when you look at this deal in the confines of the here and now and winning basketball games, which with Chris Paul on his current contract, James Harden playing at an MVP level, that is the variable that is hard to quantify. That is what Daniel House Jr., despite being on the losing end of the leverage in other ways, and if he doesn't play, personally, I'd be shocked if in 12 games or so, he's gone from a guy who the entire league passed on at the minimum on waivers in December to where he's getting $5 or $6 million guaranteed this summer just because of 12 to 15 games alongside the MVP of the league, James Harden, on a historic run, especially if he doesn't play basketball at the NBA level for 6 months. I'd be a little surprised. I think this gamble is because House thinks that the Rockets will blink first and that they are not willing to be as cutthroat as it takes to use the full extent of their leverage. And from that extent, he might be right, because this hurts the Rockets. Even if Eric Gordon comes back tomorrow, my guess he's on a minutes limitation, who knows how well he'll be able to play, and he's certainly not a 3-and-D type. He's not as long. He's not nearly as good of a defender. He's 30 years old. Eric Gordon is a better scorer. He's a better playmaker when he's right, but he's certainly not the same skill set as Daniel House Jr., and it's not that easy to fill, because certainly we've seen them try it with James Ennis. That has not worked out as well as the Rockets had hoped. To an extent, that was what they thought when they signed Michael Carter-Williams. Now, he's a guard, but they thought that his length would help him be a potential perimeter stopper. That did not happen. It's not as easy to fill that 3-and-D role as a lot of us, myself included, thought a few months ago. Several experiments have proven that. It took a while to find what Daniel House gave them, and it had an effect. We can dispute exactly how much, but clearly he was a starting player over the stretch where they've won 14 of their last 18. He has been a positive difference maker. Going by plus-minus, he and Gerald Green have been the top difference makers off the Rockets bench all season long. In short, I don't think there's animosity between House and the Rockets. I think everyone's acting in their own best interest based on this convoluted two-way contract structure. I simply think that House is betting that the Rockets will cave first, and especially his agent is making that bet. I don't think they really expect to play out the year at the G League level and then have him enter free agency in July just based on the past month relative to when no one claimed him about five and a half weeks ago, and then that alone is going to make House a major player in free agency. I don't think they think that. I think they're looking at the emphasis the Rockets have on the here and now and betting that because of that glaring need that the Rockets will ultimately blink by converting him to a one-year contract before they feel that they have to make the move to get House back on the court to ultimately restore his value to the point where he can get the kind of contract on the open market, be it this summer, a year from now, or 2 years from now. So that, to me, is at the crux of this standoff, and as to when it ends, it's hard to say, but some of it, at least, will depend on how the Rockets play on the basketball floor. More on that on the other side as we close out the podcast. Final thoughts on Tuesday evening's emergency Daniel House episode. I already led into it, but this standoff, sending Daniel House Jr. back down to the G League level by letting his two-way contract expire, it's a calculated gamble on both sides. The House side, they don't think the Rockets will cut off their nose to spite their face, make their team worse in the here and now, just to potentially get him on friendlier terms for future years. The Rockets think that if House's motivation is his next contract, that he's not willing to forgo playing at the NBA level to bet on whatever the market would give him in July based on a roughly 12 to 15 game span between mid-December and mid-January. So it's a stare down to see who blinks first. And a lot of it may come down to how the Rockets play on the basketball floor and how soon Eric Gordon and Chris Paul are able to play and play well. Because as I've mentioned a lot, the Rockets do not view positions as all that distinctive. In their scheme, there's point guards, there's wings, and there's rim runners. And in many cases, they don't necessarily need the rim runner, as evidenced by the extensive time they spent with PJ Tucker and Gary Clark at the five the other night. They just want guys that they can trust to shoot and make plays. It is not an overly complex system. So that's why before Daniel House got the job as the Rockets starting three, it was the job of Eric Gordon, who is certainly not a three by the prototypical NBA position breakdown, yet he's coming back tomorrow. Is he ready to play? Is his shooting finally going to revert back to the mean, not the liability he's been for a lot of this year? If it does, maybe that buys the Rockets more time without Daniel House, and it helps them win this standoff. How far away is Chris Paul? That's another question, because then if you have Chris Paul playing some of your backcourt minutes, that allows you to free up more Eric Gordon at the three, more Austin Rivers at the three, more Gerald Green there, effectively to take some of those minutes that would have otherwise been ticketed for Daniel House Jr. You could also throw James Ennis into that mix. It wasn't like he was a bad player early this season. He actually started to get going a bit before the hamstring injury. He has not looked the same since coming back. Well, this is going to give Ennis a longer look. So I think, in large part, House can win the battle if the likes James Ennis, Eric Gordon, Chris Paul can make him look replaceable. If they don't, then ultimately it could be the Rockets that cave. Eric Gordon is questionable for tomorrow night's game against the Nets. Hopefully we start to get some answers then as far as who can fill House's shoes and just how valuable is he and what does it mean for the value both as House sees himself and as the Rockets see him and who ultimately has the leverage in this standoff. I do wonder, however, if a compromise scenario is the only way out, considering the egos and the power of the representatives in this mess. When you're looking at Daryl Morey, when you're looking at Raymond Brothers, the high-profile nature of this standoff now that it's beginning to go national, I don't know if either side wants to come out of this with egg on their face, which if House signing the three-year minimum deal or the Rockets ultimately converting him to the one-year deal that he wants, it would be a clear signal that not just for these negotiations, but for future negotiations, that, hey, this guy is willing to cave. You can push him because he'll ultimately retreat from his deadline position. So as I see it, beyond just the obvious standoff of who has more leverage, and we see what happens when the Rockets play these games without House, at least for Wednesday. We'll see what happens after that. Keep in mind, the Rockets can unilaterally convert House at any time. So there's this misnomer out there that, well, the Rockets are stuck without him. No, they could bring him back tomorrow if they so choose. It is all within their rights. They have the power to bring him back at any time. It's just they'd be putting him on a one-year contract, which may seal his ticket out of town based on the fact that they would not have his bird rights. Even though he'd be restricted, they wouldn't have his bird rights, and that would make it very difficult, as we outlined in segment one. If you skipped ahead in the podcast, go back to the first segment. We explained what the Rockets are thinking from their side of things. To get back to the closing point, though, with Brothers and with Morey, these are two very powerful guys. I don't know that either of them wants to back down and take a complete loss. As I see it, there are a couple of potential ways out here in which House comes back to the Rockets. And ultimately, I do think it's when rather than if House comes back. I do not believe that the Rockets are willing to play out the year without House, and I don't believe House is willing to play out the year at the G League level. Ultimately, he's going to be brought back. The question is when. If nothing else, maybe the Rockets wait until after a trade buyout season. If they don't use mid-level exception then, maybe they use more of the mid-level exception to give House a slightly better than minimum deal to give him that three-year that they want so that he's not a free agent this summer. That's one of the compromise routes in which the Rockets come back to the table and give him a better than minimum offer. I don't think they want to do it right now because they don't want to box themselves in terms of buyouts, whoever comes on the market in February, by using up all their mid-level exception, which was a key consideration in them not using it this summer, so they would have full flexibility during the season. I could see the Rockets, as a sign of good faith, giving him a little bit more than the minimum on a three-year deal. I still don't think that's exactly what House wants. My opinion, looking at this, even if House were getting the Rockets' fullest extent of the mid-level exception, which is starting at $3.5 million, I think in their perfect world, House and his agent, he would play out the year on a one-year contract, play well on a long playoff run, and get a ton of visibility through that, and then he'd get more money as a free agent this summer based on that run. To me, I don't think the end game is getting the Rockets to offer more than the minimum on a three-year deal, because since all they have is the mid-level exception, it wouldn't be that much more than the minimum anyway. We'd be talking about, instead of offering a deal around, you know, a couple million dollars a year, somewhere around $3-3.5 million. I don't see that as a huge driver. What I think is their driver, their ideal world, is getting him to free agency. However, a compromise scenario is that he takes the three-year deal, delays his free agency, but gets a higher starting salary. That's at least something his agent can point to and say, hey, this standoff, it got me something. Another possible compromise is if the Rockets give him a two-year deal rather than three. Maybe they don't give him the 3 years, lock him in for long term, but instead of letting him become a free agent this July, then they could take him until July 2020. And at that point, I believe they would have at least partial bird rights. And that way, House gets the win of not being locked in until 2021, but the Rockets get the win that he doesn't hit free agency in July 2019. In my opinion, those two, either a three-year minimum deal, a three-year deal at slightly more than the minimum, or a two-year deal, are the most likely outcomes. Because based on the principles involved and the power of Daryl Morey and Raymond Brothers, I'd be surprised if someone came back with egg totally on their face. To me, there's a compromise scenario that ends up working out. That's the most likely outcome. I'd love to be wrong, and the Rockets to get House on a three-year minimum deal, that's what's in the best interest of the franchise. I'd just be surprised if both parties are willing to go to this extreme, House willing to go back down to the G League level, the Rockets being able to play games without him, even though they're relatively shorthanded. At this point, it's pretty clear that both parties are fairly firm in their positions, so I doubt that, at least relatively quickly, someone comes back to the table without a compromise. Now, who knows? Maybe this goes on for a few weeks. Maybe that changes the dynamic. We'll have to wait and see, especially what happens with the Rockets on the floor. But my guess, ultimately, if this gets solved sooner rather than later, and I hope it does, I believe it can be, then it's because there's a compromise that cooler heads prevail and that both parties get at least something out of the revised agreement. Anyway, with that, that's where we'll leave it on this Tuesday night. A bit longer than I wanted to go, but wow, this is complicated because it's not just Daniel House and the Rockets. Clearly, both need each other, but there's also the landscape of the collective bargaining agreement, the two-way contracts. It's a very complicated situation. If you want more analysis beyond just what I've been able to do over the last 30 minutes on this podcast, the best place to get it, of course, is on Twitter, where I've been trying to break it down for Rockets fans all night long. If you want more insight, the best place to get it, of course, is by following me there. I'm at Ben Dubose, simply my name. That's my handle. You can also follow the show at Locked On Rockets. So if you want more content for our next episode, which will be after Wednesday night's game, Rockets Nets, Twitter is the best place to get that. Also a Facebook account, facebook.com/LockedOnRockets, a website, LockedOnRockets.com, and an email address, LockedOnRockets@gmail.com, where you can ask me questions about the Rockets and specifically about this Daniel House situation, which I get is very confusing because of how difficult this current collective bargaining agreement of the NBA is to understand. Even if I seem to get annoyed answering the same questions over and over again, trust me, I get it. It is complicated. I want to be a resource for you guys, so be it Twitter, email, Facebook, whatever it may be, don't hesitate to reach out if I can help you understand the situation a little bit more. Anyway, with that, I'll end it right there. As always, thanks for listening, and please come back tomorrow, Wednesday evening, when the Rockets, presumably without Daniel House Jr., will be taking on the Brooklyn Nets at Toyota Center, hopefully with Eric Gordon. Stay tuned on that. Whatever happens, though, we'll be breaking it all down right here at Locked On Rockets, your home for daily coverage of Houston Rockets basketball.